Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 welcome to Radio Free Kansas. I'm your host tonight, Mike Cadell. Well, I'll tell you, it was some kind of weekend. It was some kind of weekend. We had a rainstorm coming here through tonight, and it's always a iffy situation. The internet connection out here, broadcasting from North Jefferson County, Kansas. It's a beautiful night other than the rain, and the cold front's moving in. Well, I don't know if you folks haven't heard, but there's quite a controversy going on with 9th District Kansas Legislature, Kansas Representative Bill Otto, who hails from Leroy, Kansas, along the Neosho River. I have to tell you some stories about that place, but I don't want to bore you because I know some of you are staying up late tonight to listen in to RFK and to hear about this controversial guy. He's a self-styled redneck rapper. He's stirred up quite a bit of controversy around the state and on YouTube, accused by many of making racial inferences on the floor of the legislature, and about President Obama. So I'll let you be the judge. You can listen in. I was trying to be a journalist in this case, so I just shot him a few questions. Just imagine for a moment, you're on a, you know, oh, I don't know, 12-foot flat-bottom boat floating along the Neosho River. Just you and Representative Otto. and on a Sunday afternoon. And you get to talk to the guy, trying to get to inside his head, or at least listen to what his excuses are. Here you go. Let's see how it goes. It was a Sunday afternoon. I wasn't into form, as they say, in the business. Listen in.
Listeners, yes, my listeners, you Ridge Runners, you my Bucktooth pals, my fellow podunks here in North Jefferson County and across the world on internet, welcome to Radio Free Kansas, and you are in for a treat. We have Representative Bill Otto, who has set off a YouTube sensation across the state of Kansas. And by the way, in the interest of full disclosure, I was and still am considered a member of the Leroy, Kansas hometown community. I was down there. I graduated, went to school in Leroy, Kansas. Representative Bill Otto inhabits the domain of Leroy, Kansas. And I'm most happy to have you on. How are you doing, Representative Bill Otto?
I am doing very well and very pleased to be on your show and getting to talk to another Leroyan.
Well, it is good to see. It is good to talk to you. Now, Representative Otto, can I call you Bill?
You betcha.
Bill, now, you've set off a sensation across YouTube. My Jesus, holy Christ, what is going on? I got a couple questions to ask you about the Topeka Capitol. Tim Carpenter wrote an interesting objective news article about you, making some accusations. I'd like to shoot them questions by you, but I'd like to know what's your immediate response to the YouTube sensation? I understand they took the video down.
What I want people to understand before, this wasn't any giant left-wing conspiracy or anything.
Or right-wing conspiracy.
Or right-wing. It was my daughters. I have a couple of grown daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't like their dad being called a racist. No, I'm not. And it's like they have her passwords and things, and so they took it down. And I told them, oh, my gosh, guys, you just don't know. You just threw gasoline on the fire.
excuse me. Oh, so you're saying your daughters were upset because of all the horrible things being said about you. And they
right.
That adds some clarity to the show River Water there.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad it's back up. It is controversial, Bill. You know that, don't you?
Well, actually, I didn't, and it's one of those things where, like the first news release that Anthony Hensley put out was that I made a remark and said that a African American told him he ought to be shot.
Now you stole one of my questions. That's what Tim Carpenter. And the Topeka Capitol, now, readers, listeners, you can go to the Fighting Cock Flyer. You'll have a link to Tim Carpenter's article. And I noticed, when I read that, there were no quotes in them paragraphs about alleging you wanted to shoot Rod Bremerton because he was a black man and he was against these coal fire plants. That's what Carpenter alleged in those paragraphs. Am I correct?
That's the allegation. Now,
what's going on there, Bill?
Well, what's going on is we got the liberal version of McCarthyism here.
Hmm.
That we're going around seeing if we can call anybody racist, and we're going to shut up anybody that criticizes us.
Hmm.
And I'll flat say I never said I wanted Bremerton shot or shoot anybody or. Just the opposite. It's like, in fact, probably one of the most sickest times that I have had, even though I'm tremendously pro-life, is when George Tiller was shot.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is that I felt like I would much rather bring the man to justice than to make him a martyr. I mean, that's silly thinking. And I can see some things where if you misconstrued fired, because I want him fired, or some things that I don't see where that's coming from. I do see that I did stagger him when the news release first said a governor's staff, and I asked the reporters, are there any African-Americans on the governor's staff? And considering it's a Democratic staff, you know, nobody could think right off. So, and it's like, I don't know, I still haven't got the answer to that. I don't think there are any. So I couldn't know. My biggest problem is I am so not racist that I treat everybody just the same. I mean, whenever I talk to people in fact, they moved me. I used to be over on the Democrat side. I used to banter with Senator Betts quite a bit, as he was along the line, and I enjoyed him, and he would come watch, and I would say things like to him. It's like, well, you over here keeping the donkeys tied to the single tree. And he laughed and laughed, and I had to explain to him about horses and wagons and I had to give him an explanation of that. But it's like, to me, and my daughter, that I have a daughter that's a psychologist, and she said, Dad, you need sensitivity training. I said, no, Amy, the whole world needs sensitivity training. They need my kind of training. Mm-hmm. What I was excited about, I really was, but it's like, I was for McCain, but it's like when Obama won, it's like this could be the end of racism. This could be Martin Luther King's dream. And I'm fearing what's happening is it's just being the reverse. It's actually making people more think the thought police are there.
Well, what do you mean more the reverse? I mean, with the a mulatto, his wife or his mother is from Kansas, his father is African American or whatever. But the point is that he's president of the United States now. And what do you mean it could be the reverse? I don't understand. Are you referring to what many people are calling his? He's no socialist, but I mean I could prove that, but. A lot of people are calling him a socialist and Hitler. President Obama is a Nazi. I mean, do you believe any of that stuff, Bill?
Well, here's what I
believe. You believe any of that?
Well, I believe that he's a...
You really think it's socialist?
Socialist, I think, would be a... I fear that he's pretty socialistic.
Hmm. Well,
that's not a crime, and
well, not with Social Security and Medicaid.
That's right.
And Veterans Administration. Do you think most American people, including your constituency in Leroy, Kansas, who many, by the way, I know, are receiving Medicaid or veteran benefits or Social Security? Those are
we've been moving that way for a long time.
Now, are those bad things? You think all your constituents should be cut off of that? Because it's, are you
no,
against that stuff?
That's the worry for me, and that is we need to pay for the things that we're doing.
Very good.
And we've committed to programs, and we need to pay for those programs.
Yeah.
And when you see projections that say we need to be solving those problems of how to pay for the programs that we've already committed to without adding more.
Now, does that apply into the state of Kansas? You can give us a rare insight inside the state of Kansas. I noticed that some of your stuff was about cutting back certain programs. One was alleged by Tim Carpenter in his article about African-American, something to do with African-American Commission. Carpenter, reporter Carpenter, created a article where it sounded like, Bill, Representative
mm-hmm.
Otto, that you have a systematic program of racism, not just against President Obama with the other dark side, the other dark meat, but also with your opposition to funding the African American, something to do with commission, and Rod Bremerton, the head of health, the Department of Health and Human Services, who, because he was opposed to coal plants. These are the things.
Well, actually,
that, this is what Carpenter wrote, folks, listeners.
Have to say, if he researched a little deeper, he'd find Secretary Brumby and I have been at war almost from the day I set foot in the Capitol before the coal fire. The health and environment is in charge of child care, and they have been doing a pathetic job. Kansas is ranked almost near the bottom. And it has been an ongoing effort to me, trying different things. And his agency has fought every step of the way to try to help our young children and help parents get along.
Now, what do you mean by that? Are you referring to the infant mortality rate here in the state?
There's a lot of
kids dying before or after, right? You know, immediately around.
No. What I'm referring to is some of their places like Sedgwick County. We've had children dying in daycare facilities. Several incidences of that, and the problem has been, and we have successfully changed a few regulations. And the defense of Brumby, actually, as I've got clarity of the issue, the problem is we've got the wrong agency dealing with supervising child care. It should be education, should be SRS. They're more interested in the parts per million that you wipe down the Clorox than the statistics. I mean, they're more interested when they inspect people, they're more interested in paperwork, and then they will have a daycare provider maybe fine or $500 for a violation. Well, if you're an oil man, you reach for your pocket and you pay it. If you're a daycare center,
yeah, no
that's
money.
A problem.
Yeah, well, it costs a lot of money. Yeah,
it costs a lot of money. People, these are not, you know, these are people struggling, and we have had many. In fact, we've actually had some hearings with parents that where we've had the highway patrol there as security. People have been so aggravated about this, and it's a serious problem in the state of Kansas. Now the problem of it is working parents don't have money for political contributions. The providers don't have money for political, and so the bottom line of it is there's not very many people looking for this issue.
Are you inferring that political contributions lend more towards power and getting laws passed through the state legislature?
Yes, they do. I will flatly say yes, that people that have money and give things on issues do get things done.
This is not a partisan issue. This is just a fact.
Oh, this is not a partisan issue. One of the things that's frustrated with me, when I talk about making things worse and kind of reverse racism.
Yeah.
And I co-sponsored a bill with a lady from Wichita, a very liberal African-American lady, that we wanted to stop these and not the payday loans. The one I signed on with was to stop the title loans, which is basically a secure loan at hundreds of percent interest. And you should see the hearings we had. They had two bills that they had hearings on, payday loans. They bust people in, the special interest groups bust people in, poor people, minorities, poor whites, whatever. And they had buttons about don't take our chances, and then like
even though basically Bill aren't in my opinion, this is my opinion, straight up, these payday loans are loan sharks. And
they're loan sharks.
They prey on the poor people. And there's another one, the title for deed or something with cars. They do that with cars.
Yeah, well, that was the bill that I was. That was the bill I co-sponsored with.
Preying on the poor. It's just like vampires. Would you agree with me? They're horrible people. Horrible corporate.
It is, and it's one of those things where you start, and it's like I got elected, and then I got money, and I didn't know what people were. It's like this banking interest.
Yeah.
And you know what? After I sponsored that bill,
yeah,
I didn't see any more contributions from those people.
Mm-hmm. So they really know where they're giving their money to.
Oh, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
I bet they do.
And you're saying that even if, and let's be honest, Representative Otto, you just gave a breath of opposition in a committee. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
A breath, just a whisper of an opposition in a committee, and suddenly these lobbyists turned on you and brought people against you. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's one of those things where it's simple. You don't support people who support your side. When they don't support your side, you don't support them. And that's the reason. It's like people say, why in the world is this going on? And it's not. It's bipartisan. It's like,
yeah.
You know, you've got the Democrat.
Both sides do it. Both sides engage in it. Well, there's something a guy told me once, and I can't remember his name. I read it, and I heard it. A guy told me that if you are ever privy to the inside of legislation where laws are being passed by committees and things like that, he compared it to making sausage. And for the people, most people, if they'd ever saw what was going on in the wieners and hot dogs and sausage, they wouldn't want to eat it.
That's true.
You think there's something to that, Representative Otto?
There is something to that, but I'm going to say proudly, and this is another bipartisan on the proud side in Kansas.
Yeah.
When I file a bill, within 24 hours, it's posted online. When it comes out of a committee, I mean, we may mark up the bill. Everybody sees. Everybody agrees on what it is.
What does that mean, mark up a bill, brother?
Well, what you do is you get a bill, and you get the way it was filed,
mm-hmm.
and then we will discuss it in committee. And then when we do what's called work the bill, we will either on the computer or we'll take it the actual paper copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll say, well, line page 4, line 27, I think it should be deleted. And then we'll make motions on amending it, and it'll either pass or fail, and then you vote on the final bill as amended. And then within 24 hours after it comes out of committee, the amended version is up.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, if we do floor amendments, you are to turn your floor amendments in so that as soon as you walk to the mic to have your amendment, the clerk can then put it online so everybody can see on their computers what your amendment is.
Interesting.
So what's happening in Washington is a beyond the pale travesty when you have people say, we don't know how to do it. Well, if Kansas can do it.
Well, I'm not sure. You're making a leap there. You jumped from the state legislature in your direct experience to Washington. I mean, could you tell me what's the bridge here? You're saying in Washington they do the same thing or what?
Well, they should be. I mean, we got the House, Senate, we're having bills, and it should be similar.
Mm-hmm.
But when, you know, to me, I can't believe people saying, well, no, I didn't read the bill. Well,
mm-hmm.
I guess maybe the difference is that in Kansas, we don't have staff, and I have to do it myself,
mm-hmm.
read it myself. And in Washington, you can tell all the other staff to do it and then tell you how to do it.
Well,
I didn't vote for the staff. I voted for the person. Yeah, you know, And it's just, to me, that is some one thing that is absolutely mind-boggling when we're seeing what we would call, and I'm going to say we did it for the first time in my life this year. We actually passed a conceptual bill.
Yeah.
And what we did was, it was because at the end of the session, we were going to be closing, we were going to get the unemployment extension, we had to basically comply with some regulations that the feds put out, and we weren't really sure exactly what those were.
Right.
So, and I didn't like doing that, but by the same token, when I have a lot of unemployment, Allen County is a very industrialized and...
I guess that's part of your district, isn't it, Allen County?
Yep.
Yep. And now, dear old Leroy down there, that's just a sliver, I guess.
Just a sliver. I have 3 townships in Coffee County.
Oh, is that right? Is it Neosho Falls or what?
Around Neosho Falls.
Westphalia? Is Westphalia in your township or what?
No, I just have, no, it's just, it comes over basically.
Aliceville.
The road.
Aliceville.
Aliceville and Leroy are the 2 towns.
Ah. And then, you know, Aliceville was, the kids would come, when we had a high school in Leroy, which I went to, the Aliceville kids, the farm kids, would come down there from Aliceville. They had a 1-room, I remember going up to Aliceville, and they had a 1-room schoolhouse there, and they brought their kids, I was a kid too, and they brought them down to Leroy High School back when we had a high school. And that's interesting. The Westphalia kids was a voluntary thing. They had to sort of cross a line to come down to high school in Leroy. But Aliceville, it's an unincorporated town, and that's part of your district too, eh?
That's part of my district. In fact, I know you played football with Williamsburg.
Yes. Yeah.
I go clear to Williamsburg in Franklin County, and I have Richmond and Princeton in Franklin. I have most of Anderson of the land, but there's a Bill Fiburn is in Garnett, so there's kind of a pie that goes down to Garnett,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And where he is, and then I have all of Allen County, which for me was good because either my dad, I was raised in a little town of Ellsmore on the other side of Iola and Allen County.
Really? I didn't know that. Yeah. Really?
And so my dad was superintendent at Crest for years and was superintendent at Ellsmore before that. So my dad, my brother, myself have lived in about every corner of the district.
You know, the Democrats are smearing you right now because they're saying that, yeah, that the, well, they're inferring. They're not saying directly, but they're saying that you were never a teacher. And that you are a driving instructor, and that your dad got you the job. No, I'm just saying I can prove that, by the way.
Oh my! Well, that just goes to show you what there. I mean, I've taught I taught 20 years in Leroy,
mm-hmm.
And I taught everything, mostly junior high and lower math. Taught science, I've taught English. In fact, even after I retired, I substituted for home ec, and I've even taught shop some on substituting. So
excellent. Oh.
So yeah, I taught drivers. I did teach driver's ed too, and that is.
But
one
you
of
taught
them.
You taught other courses too, right?
Oh my, yes.
And you were certified in the state of Kansas.
I still am certified in the state of
Kansas. And where did you go to school at? By the
Pittsburgh,
way.
Pittsburgh State.
Right on. That's a good
bachelor's, master's, and EDS.
Excellent, brother. Well, now I'm going to get a lot of flack from my Democratic friends over this interview, but I want to extend an invitation to you, Bill, Representative Otto from my hometown, Leroy, Kansas. I want to extend an invitation to you to come back to Radio Free Kansas and tell your side, because now that I've heard, I was just watching on Channel 27 that it was reposted, your video. We'll address that video at a future date, but in the meantime, I want you to know there's an invitation extended. You're welcome to tell your side, and we have no commercial interruptions. It's an extended conversation on Radio Free Kansas, and I want you to come back again. Will you consider that representative?
I sure will. Very good talking with you.
And I'm hold on just a minute.
Morning and at midnight, meet the starry sky. Network, you can get it, and you can get it if you try. Strolling with the one boy, sighing sigh after sigh. Network, you can get it, and you can get it if you try. Just imagine someone waiting at the cottage door, waiting hard to come on. Who could ask for anything more? Loving one who loves you, and then taking that vow. Network, if you can get it, and if you get it home, watch, tell me how I'm holding hands at midnight, neath a starry sky. Oh my, oh my, oh my, I've been such a perfect dough. Cold ground thinking of the one I love. I don't know and I don't care. I feel as though floating on air. Go through the time of my soul, thinking of the one that I love. Just imagine someone waiting at the cottage door. Dee 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 dee.
Standard way to do this is to resort to what in more honest days used to be called propaganda, manufacture of consent, creation of necessary illusions, various ways of either marginalizing the general public or reducing them to apathy in some fashion.
Well, that was... Sorry, I hit the wrong button there. That was Noam Chomsky from the film documentary from Canada, Manufacturing Consent, Necessary Illusions, with Professor Noam Chomsky. Or Manufacturing Consent, I guess is the name of it. Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview. I'll be... I'm going to play a couple shorts. And, well, let me find that interesting. With Otto. Representative Otto. Didn't seem quite the crazy. In the interest of full disclosure, I'll let you know all I did was look up his number of the House Legislators page on KS.gov and called him. Left a few messages. Took me a couple days to get it. He called me back. It's as simple as that. Of course, I'm a native. I come from that area, so I appreciate that. And I do look forward to having him back on. I think that's access is very important. Not that I'm going to kiss anyone's ass over it. I never have. As you listeners know of Radio Free Kansas, I've really never kissed anyone's ass. That's probably one of my problems. But I think maybe some of these hard-headed, libertarian-type Republican legislators, they might respect that about me, and I think I might have access where others wouldn't be. Or, now to put it more bluntly, I think they may have some populist strains, which may or may not be progressive. There's a certain appeal from the people toward those kind of legislators. I certainly am going to open the same hand to Senator Brownback, who's running for governor. I think it's time for someone like him to come on. Pat Roberts, well, that will be a touchy situation. Senator Pat is from Jefferson County, Kansas, and I'm a little touchy there on that subject of Senator Pat. But Senator, and besides, he's in Washington, D.C., what does that really matter, you know? In other news, did you notice that they're bragging up Congressman Todd T. Hart? Was on WIBW 580 AM radio. That's right, folks, the blowtorch of Topeka, the right-wing hate machine, skin-deep libertarians, your source for Glenn Beck and all kinds of other crazy trash, had Congressman Todd T. Hart on, bragging about the $31 or $32 million going towards the National Biological Agricultural Defense Facility, the Germ Warfare Research Lab in Manhattan, Kansas, on the campus of beautiful Kansas State University. And he slipped up today on WIBW 580 AM radio. He slipped up because he said something I hadn't heard before. Why, $31 million of our hard money, taxpayers' money. There's a matching, the state of Kansas is matching it. And here they're cutting back the times and the hours on the courthouses, or custodians are being laid off at the public schools, teachers are being shortened in their paychecks, county workers are being pushed to get out early. And we're dumping $31 million matching funds for this is just a research study on the Germ Warfare Research Lab, which is going to be a wonderful thing to have an outbreak from. Yes, just go to the Fighting Cock Flyer, scroll down to No NBAF, NBAF. There's a sunflower on the left-hand margin, big sunflower. You'll see it on the left-hand margin and click that, and that'll take you to the local Manhattan, Kansas opposition group to it. A lot of decent folk there. Check them out. Yeah, it's something else. I'll tell you, it's just something else that gets on my nerves. You know, I don't know what the heads or tails sometimes. I don't know if I was hard enough on the guy or... I just don't know. I can't figure it out. No. Yeah, I can't figure it out, but those are the old days. Leroy's not like that anymore, I guess. We've got the other dark meat down there on the Neo Show in the form of Representative Bill Otto. On to an interview I also conducted with Dave Lindorf on healthcare, a candid conversation.
Fellow Ridge Runners, you sodbust and hayseeds out here, I've got Dave Lindorf on the phone. I promised you 2 weeks ago that we'd get Dave back on it. We'd try to talk about health care. I don't know. Mr. Lindorf, the Dow Jones just broke 10,000 yesterday. You'd think heaven had just, man, it's come down to heaven in Wall Street. And we got a... We got our old stalwart native Kansan from Jefferson County, my county, Senator Pat Roberts, saying that the future of healthcare reform was similar to a pickup truck driving over a roll of barbed wire. If you guys know what that's like, that's a mess. That's when you get up around the drivetrain and you're stuck and you can't drive down the road. You know, you're dragging barbed wire. You think that's an apt?
I was going to say that sounds like the a description of the stock market.
Oh.
But that's all right.
you think, really?
I mean, you know, the reason that the stock market's gone up to 10,000 is because companies our big companies are earning most of their profits and getting most of their sales now overseas from their offshore operations, and because the dollar is crashing, their earnings, which are in, you know, foreign currency, yen, renminbi, and euros, are going up. So I mean, if you have a 10% profit on your operations in Europe and the drops 14% against the euro, your European profits just went up 14%. So all these companies are reporting higher earnings, but it's because of the collapse of the dollar.
Not a
particularly great reason to say to see your market going up.
I see. Well, you know, Michael Moore was on Wolf Blitzer, I guess, at CNN. I don't have cable, so I watched it on YouTube. And Moore had an interesting analogy. He said that when the stock market goes up, that means it's the unemployment's going up too. It's sort of like the more misery for American workers, the better it seems for Dow Jones or for the Wall
Street. He's right. Every time they report higher unemployment, the stock market takes a jump because, you know, businesses say, "Well, we got our costs under control."
God,
it's pretty short-sighted. You can't have a healthy economy with 20% unemployment, which is what we really have now.
Yeah,
if you count the underemployed and the people who've given up looking.
Yeah, and then there's people talking about Spain. I guess Spain has an official 20%.
Well, they just honestly count it, and we don't. I mean, we have the same unemployment as them, but, you know, the stories report honestly about Spain, but they can't report honestly here because they won't report about the part-time employed and the people who give up looking. It's just in Spain they count those.
Uh-huh. I was watching the news. I thought, my God, they broke 10,000 after a year. And National Public Radio reported it. It was sort of mystifying. I'm like going, you know, it's not getting better out here in Kansas, I'll tell you. You think Pat Senator Roberts? I mean, his analogy. I mean, he kept his mouth shut during the dark years of the Bush administration. He was on the Senate Intelligence Committee. Excuse me. We know
that's an oxymoron if I ever heard one. Senate and intelligence. Use these two words in a sentence.
They're like military police.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what is he? He's on the Senate Finance Committee. Now, I hadn't heard a peep out of that guy. He's from my county. And I hadn't heard from a peep. Now he was on, I'll be damned, I saw him on soundbited on the Lear News Hour on PBS. I heard him on NPR, probably just Kansas affiliate. But it suddenly bobs that bald head of his up in the air, and he gives out these folksy quips about he's on the Finance Committee, I guess, huh? Is he the stalwart or something with Baucus? Or I didn't know he was hooked up with them people. What is that? Yeah, Baucus. Who is that guy? That guy's
Baucus?
Yeah.
From Montana.
Montana. Well, that makes sense there.
Big sky country.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm very conservative. What's your take on the health, so-called health care reform? Where are, I don't know.
I hate to say it, but I have to agree with Pat Roberts.
Oh!
I think it is like a pickup truck running over barbed wire. I mean, this is not health reform we're getting here. The bill is a disaster, and it just, I remember in his speech, Obama said, "I don't want to just kick the can down the road." Well, that's exactly what he's doing. He's kicking the can down the road. This reform is not going to, reform in quotes, is not going to fix health care. There's no caps on what insurance companies can charge, so rates will go up. There's no caps on what hospitals can charge. There's no caps on pharmaceutical charges. In fact, the insurance companies, Barack Obama agreed in a behind closed doors meeting that there would be no bargaining by Medicare, for example, with drug companies to set drug prices lower like they do in Canada. There's just going to be no cost controls. And if there's no cost controls and there's no significant public option, which there won't be, to force the insurance companies to compete on price, we're just going to be in the same boat. The only difference, really, what this really is a gigantic handout to the insurance industry of 40 or 50 million captive customers who right now aren't buying insurance. And it's a great deal for the insurance companies because at least half of that, 40 to 50 million people are young people who are gambling that they're healthy so they don't need health insurance. And it might be a stupid move on their part or not, but, they're the best customers for the insurance industry because they can overcharge them on the rates and not have to pay for much because they don't get much medical care.
Well, there's just so many of my neighbors that are just one catastrophic health disaster. They come out, say they get diagnosed with lymphoma or this young man who's recently divorced, he lost, he's got $7,000 in medical debts and he's finished the divorce. They're having to sell the house, can't sell a house. He's looking at foreclosure or possible bankruptcy, and he's got $7,000 in medical bills from having three kids over the span of, 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he has insurance. He has medical insurance. It's just that, there's all these deductibles and stuff, that's just two neighbors. There's others that are like that.
Most people who buy insurance on their own, who don't get it on the job, the only way you can afford it is to get a huge deductible. I remember even years ago when my wife and I were both freelancers, She was a musician, and we always tried to have insurance because my wife had a chronic thyroid condition, and we felt like we really needed to keep it going so they wouldn't have her as a pre-existing condition. And things were much cheaper, you know, 25, 30 years ago. But even then, the only plan we could afford was a $1,500 deductible insurance plan. And so what I discovered was, you know, it wasn't so bad with, we were like in our 20s and 30s and we were healthy.
Yeah.
So it wasn't so bad. But when we had our daughter, she had, before she was, I guess she was just over a year old, she had a febrile seizure where she stopped breathing completely one Sunday morning. And my wife was holding her, and suddenly she started screaming and said, she's not breathing. I came in. My daughter was completely blue.
Oh, my God.
Her eyes were back in her head, and my wife was frantically trying to blow air into her. Nothing was happening. And it turned out to be not terrible. You know, I stupidly dialed the number for our pediatrician instead of 411. And luckily, one of the partners in this doctor's office was in there that Sunday catching up on his records, and he answered the phone, and I screamed into the phone, my daughter's not breathing, you know, and he said, calm down. He said, what does she look like? I described her, and he said, is her body stiff? And I said to my wife, is her body stiff? And she said, yes. And he said, okay, all it is febrile seizure. She'll come out of it. Just, you know, keep her calm and keep a blanket on her. So, you know, sure enough, you know, within another minute, she started turning pink and she started breathing slowly. And then it was okay. We rushed her to the hospital. And, you know, but it, what happened was certain kids get febrile seizures when they get a spike in temperature, and it goes away after about the age of five. So for 3 or 4 years, we had to panic that, you know, every time she'd get a fever, she might get a febrile seizure.
Oh,
so, you know, what we would do is whenever she'd get sick with a and start to have a temperature, I would sit there thinking, well, should I take her to the doctor and have and pay $60 because, you know, I had this $1,500 deductible.
Uh-huh.
So it didn't cover visits to the pediatrician. So I would find myself thinking, should I take her to the doctor? He's just going to say it's a virus and send me home, right? Uh-huh. And or maybe it'll turn out to be something like strep throat, and he can give her an antibiotic, and she won't get a spike in temperature. And so I'd be playing this off in my head, and I'd be thinking, well, do I want to waste the $60, which it probably, you know, 9 out of 10 times there wasn't anything to do, and I'd blow the $60, which I didn't have, take a chance that I might be able to save my daughter from a febrile seizure. And, you know, what a horrible thing to have to do as a parent. And I finally found myself thinking, this is really stupid. You know, I'm sweating $60 over my daughter's health. And yet, you know, when you added all those visits to the doctor up in a year that were pointless, you know, it would be $600 or $1,200. And I'd almost get to my deductible just for the time I took her in to be told to go home again. And nobody should have to go through that kind of agony.
No, and that's what I was sharing with you about my neighbors, that I'm like sort of, it's a mess. It is. It's a real mess for people who have to work for a living. But I don't, where's the outrage? I mean, when they come out in these last, this summer, you'd think all these poor people, you know, these people on Medicaid, you know, don't mess with my Medicaid and to hell with Socialist Obama. I mean, what the hell? This combobulated thinking's going on, and where's the electorate? I don't know what to tell you. It's just,
we live in the retarded states of America. You know, I have an uncle who's retired military, right? And he's a very religious right-wing guy.
Yeah.
And he sends me these missives about, you know, how Obama's turning America into a communist country. And, he tells me about how he's going to destroy health care by making it socialized. And at one time I wrote him and I said, Uncle Duke, don't you get your care at the Veterans Hospital? And he wrote back and said, yep. And I said, Uncle Duke, that's socialist medicine. The doctors are all on salary. The hospital's owned by the government, and you like it.
Yeah, sure he does, yeah.
But they don't. People just don't think. It's like, oh, that's different. That's the Veterans Administration. What? He does. He gets great care, you know. And I mean, the VA is a model system, which is exactly like the British system, you know, of the national health. And then there's this wonderful, you know, situation we have where Medicare is, it's single payer. It's exactly the system that they call Medicare in Canada. The only difference is it's bigger than the Canadian system. There are more people getting Medicare in the United States than there are people in Canada. And it's older than the Canadian system. Medicare started in 65. The Canadian system started in the 70s.
Oh,
so we have an older, bigger single-payer system than the Canadians, except in Canada, everybody gets on it when they're born, and in America, you have to wait till you're 65 to get single-payer health care.
I'll be damned. Yeah, and you know, and there, you, like, take your $60 doctor call there with your daughter when she's younger. You know, our local PBS affiliate, when it went digital, they got three channels now instead of just one. And one of them is something called MWZ. It's global news is what it is. You actually can get the English Al Jazeera beamed in free into your home. English Al Jazeera. You get Deutsche Welle. I'm not pronouncing it.
Deutsche Welle.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it. German news, half hour. And then you get France 24. My wife, she can say that. It's something, Quatre or something. And we get French 24 for a half hour. You get all this fabulous world news from around the world for a half hour episodes. And some of it is slanted, like some of it coming out of the Middle East, like Pakistan and India. It's interesting watching the different half-hour news episodes clash. Well, make a long story short, they had a news feature from France 24 on their health system compared to the Swiss, I guess, health system, and they were arguing over how many clinics per block to have. And I'm like going, my God, I wonder how many Americans are watching this, because these are walk-in clinics.
Not too many.
They're just talking. They're talking about walk-in clinics where people can walk in. They have doctors. Oh, my clock. They have doctors. They have doctors who are arguing public health policy experts in their countries, having serious discussions about how much cost-effectiveness it is to have people go in like you and your daughter. To go in early, you know, and to get to, and not to have the cost as a hindrance from people in making those decisions. And it's in the long run, it's more efficient to have people. That's what seemed to be the consensus. It's in the long run, it's cheaper to have people not to be prohibited by cost to come into these general. They call them general practice clinics, GP clinics.
Yeah. So just take my daughter as an example. You know, those febrile seizures are 95% of the time are completely harmless because your body just goes into the seizure to protect your brain, and then when you're deprived of oxygen enough, it forces you to breathe. But once in a while, it goes too long, and you get brain damage. And so you get kids with brain damage from a febrile seizure from just a simple, ordinary flu kind of infection.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, logically, you would say, okay, if you can prevent the febrile seizure, which is really easy to do with a little, you know, then you've prevented, you know, the 5% of permanent brain injury, which becomes like a lifelong $200,000-$400,000 medical issue for society, because it's not going to be paid for by the person.
Right.
And so, you know, just to be crude, simple cost effectiveness would say that you want a kid who's victim of febrile seizures to get treatment right away every time they get sick, so they don't have the risk of a permanent mental injury.
Right.
But no, we don't do that. We'd rather treat the poor, you know, destroyed kid. I mean, thank God nothing happened to my daughter, but, you know, we want to treat the poor, damaged kid. I could say the same thing about my son. You know, I adopted a son in Hong Kong. He had collapsed eardrums, which we didn't learn about until he was in daycare, and he got a hearing test, and they called us in and said, you know, he doesn't hear very well. So we brought him to the Children's Hospital in Philly, which is a really class outfit.
Right.
And the ENT guy looked, and he said, well, his eardrums are collapsed from multiple infections, probably when he was an orphan in the orphanage. And he said, luckily, we can salvage the eardrums. If it had been left much longer, they would have fused to the back of his ear, and the eardrums would have been gone. So he's got perfect hearing now at 16, but, you know, that was an expense of, you know, without insurance, it would have been maybe $5,000 or $6,000 to treat. They had to put the little holes in the eardrum to allow the air in, and then, you know, it had to heal. And, you know, the thing is, so there's $5,000 or $6,000, which I had because we had insurance. If I didn't have it, we probably never would have gotten it fixed, and today he'd be a deaf kid.
Right.
And that would be another burden on society, because it would affect his job potential. He'd have to have special education all through high school. You know, the costs to society would be immense, and I'm sure there are plenty of kids, poor kids, who are in that situation. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
On a dollars and cents basis, it's stupid.
Retarded states of America. People are trying to figure this out, and where does this bill come out of? Why is the public health bill, this public health? I guess it's not even public now. It's not really health reform. It changed from, you know, it's just turned into it's just bastardized, filtered, watered down, muddied over, earmarked out of the ass. I mean, this is it. This bill traveling now. It's going to go into the great debate is coming. Do you got anything to say? What are we going to do? I guess we'll go back to calling up. I'll call Pat Roberts. That's like talking to a deaf man about
option. Or maybe they didn't ever fix his eardrums when he was a kid. I mean, these guys are totally. I've just come to the conclusion that our government is completely dysfunctional. It's owned lock, stock, and barrel by the corporate interests that it caters to, and they don't give a damn about us anymore. I mean, it really, we're at the point where voting against all incumbents is probably the only answer. I mean, these guys all have to be ousted.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. Now, I got a right-wing uncle, and he's not that. He's an intelligent man. He is. He really is. And he hasn't been tainted with any kind of traumatized through any war experiences or anything. He's an intelligent man, really is. College graduate, blah, blah, blah. And he sent along one, you know, you were talking about your Uncle Duke. This is Uncle Bob. And he very seldom comments on anything. But he sent along this Ford, and basically it just goes down to that's what he just said. It was a Ford. He didn't ride it. It was one of those, I don't know, disinformation campaigns that just float on through the cloud of the internet and pass from place to place. And I get a lot of them. A lot of them are just crazy right-wing nutso stuff. But this one, and I thought, that's what he said. We should just kick them all out, the whole Congress. And I'm like, I wonder if he knew what he was talking about, if he was forwarding it. Now I'm hearing this from you. Just run them all out, all the incumbents, huh?
That's what I'd say. I mean, I wouldn't vote for anybody. I would vote for nobody who's getting corporate money. That's the thing. The problem with voting all out is
find out who's getting it and who ain't, Dave.
If you can find out from Common Cause, but the problem, you know, the problem is you probably would end up with today you'd end up with a Republican Congress, which is not a great thing, but it would still be better. I mean, if you voted for the opponent in every race, since the Democrats are in majorities, you would end up with a Republican majority in both houses, would not be a good outcome, because Republicans are on balance, you're more likely to get a pro-corporate candidate than with Democrats, because at least with Democrats you get a few good guys like Bernie Sanders, or that wonderful woman Kohut or whatever that's in Michael Moore's movie from Ohio.
Oh yeah,
Cap Tour or What's her name?
I haven't seen the movie, but I've seen the preview. She's in the preview.
I want her for president.
Yeah.
Standing up there and telling people, if you get a foreclosure notice, don't you leave your house.
Oh, no. My God. That's not in the preview. Huh.
Yeah, no, she stood on the floor of the house and she said, I say this to every American, if you get a foreclosure notice on your house, don't you leave that house. She said the odds are they don't have the document to prove that they own your house.
And there's a law going, by the way, listeners, there's a law going through that the Kansas Supreme Court ruled on about this thing about presenting
yep.
your deed, and it was held up.
They don't have it anymore. They all these credit default swaps and everything, what they did was they sold these things back and forth electronically, and the documents, most of them got thrown out by your bank because
mm-hmm.
your bank didn't want to have the paperwork anymore. They didn't own the mortgage. That stuff's long ago gone to the dumpster. So, you know, if it doesn't exist, they're screwed.
That is.
They don't have a contract to prove that they own your house.
Right, because they bundled it up in all these weird toxic assets, and then they lost their asses on it. I was surprised to hear that. Ellen Brown wrote the book Web of Debt, folks. She sent
mm-hmm.
me a forward saying, Mike, do you know what happened in your state Supreme Court? And, of course, I didn't. And I guess she's out in California. She's out in California.
Well, sure. Nobody writes about it. Your local papers probably ignored it.
Oh, no. They don't want I don't think they want the natives. The natives, you know, I got good things to say about some of my small town editors. But a lot of them in Kansas and the small town country weeklies, they're not going to spill the beans on a local bank because a local bank is their biggest advertiser. And
That's right. By rights, there should be banner headlines in every newspaper in the country that, you know, the bank doesn't have a mortgage anymore. You know, you just stop paying.
You got the property, buddy. It's yours, you know. Well, that's interesting that this foreclosure has developed to this point. I know it is out here, and it bugs the hell out of me that people are. Don't you think that there's a twist? Don't you think there's, I guess, a misery index at a certain point? People are just going to, they're not going to take it any longer. They're going to have, you know, a Howard Beale moment from the movie Network. There's going to be mass, you know, everybody's going to be out yelling out, not just yelling out their windows, but you know, doing something. I mean, I just can't help but think that this.
Well, that was the problem with Network was that, you know, I mean, it was a pointless scream out the window. It
yeah.
didn't amount to anything. And that's Americans. You know, we just, I wrote a piece criticizing my neighbors because people are going, I learned this from a woman I like who's at the cash register in my local market. You know, she looked really bedraggled one night at 11 o'clock when I went in to get some milk. And I said, boy, you look terrible today. You look like you had a really tough day. And she said, oh, God. She said, I haven't sat down once. She said, when I tried to sit down for my break, some of the customers were yelling that there was nobody at the cash register. And they made me get up and go to work. And she said the problem was that the supermarket has laid off a lot of cashiers, and so they're all working harder. But what happens is the customers are getting angry at the cashiers because
uh-huh.
the lines are slow. And so I wrote a piece saying, you know, okay, look, I know you're under stress because you're worried about your job, and I know you're working, you know, hard, and you're coming home and you want to get through the store line and home to make dinner. But don't take it out on the cashier. If you're mad at the poor service, go to the manager and say,
uh-huh.
if you don't hire more cashiers, I'm going to another market. It's not the cashier's fault. You know, Americans just get mad, period, stupidly mad.
Uh-huh.
And they get mad at the wrong targets.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably good to think that. Out here, they just knocked off the local supermarket, the only one within a 12-mile radius. There's only one grocery store. It got robbed. I walked in there to buy food. And I shop there loyally. I know the manager. He's doing the best he can. He does his good food, you know, fresh. And he even buys local. He'll buy local produce, and tomato season is great because you can go through the corporate tomatoes, and you can find some homegrown ones mixed in among them. smart produce person can pick out some great locally grown produce that he's filtering through the corporate lab. He's not supposed to do that, but it got robbed. And I didn't know that. And I talked to him afterwards, after the sheriff's car left, the county sheriff's. Come find out, they broke in. What did they steal? They stole as many cartons of cigarettes as they could get, and they just trashed his office looking for money. And of course, there wasn't hardly any money because he deposits it all in the bank at the end of every evening. So they basically, the target of opportunity was cigarettes. And I'm like going, you'd think, there's all kinds of things to steal in a grocery store, but cigarettes are, the addicts out here are desperate with cigarettes at $6 a pack. People, I've talked to them, and I'm going, well, quit smoking lights, kill yourself quicker, smoke full tar and nicotine. And it won't cost you as much in the long run. You won't make it to 60.
That's
so.
Good. That's a good argument.
That's a sick argument. That's what
I just inhale cigars.
Right. It started inhaling. But they knocked off. They robbed the cigarettes of the place. And I was thinking, my God, it's getting sort of tough out here. That was a brazen. That kind of crime doesn't occur out here hardly at all. I was thinking that people. Are not thinking. They get mad. These guys are probably addicts, nicotine addicts that just got pissed off. They went, you're talking about targets. They said, we'll just knock over Steve's grocery store and take the cigarettes out of it because we're going through withdrawals. Now, there's an argument there for public health. But where people can walk into a clinic, say, I'm jonesing, I need to get off cigarettes, I don't know how. Please don't charge me $250 for another treatment program. Could you just help me out?
You know what we need? We need Jesse James again. I remember once I was hitchhiking with my wife through the Great American West. We were up somewhere north of Moab, Utah at night, and we got let off at a turn where there was like this gas station, and it turned out to be a bus stop for some long distance bus. So there were about seven or eight people hanging, waiting for a bus at 2 a.m, and we're out there too, and this Indian comes walking down the road. And he walks up to a Coke machine that was at the gas station. He's got two drivers in his pocket. He pulls them out, and everybody's sort of looking at him. He stands at the Coke machine. He puts the screwdrivers on either side of the front of the Coke box and then slams the screwdrivers with the heels of his hands, and the whole thing pops open.
Oh, my God.
Right? And so then we're all just watching, sort of dumbfounded. And he goes in and he takes the coin box out of it. And, it's a big, heavy coin box, all four quarters.
Yeah.
And then here's the great part. He walks up to us, and he tells everybody to put their hands out, and he pours quarters into everybody's hands.
Oh, my God.
Right? And then he takes the rest.
That's nice.
It was like Jesse James.
Yeah,
it's like
out of the movies. Like the
great.
Cool hand.
It was great. And
cool
he
hand
goes
Luke.
Walking, he goes walking on down the road. He probably had, 200 quarters.
Right.
And we all had our pockets full of quarters, too. And he was really smart because if a cop had come by and said, who did this? We all would have said, we don't know.
That's like something out of Cool Hand Luke.
It was just beautiful. It was so smooth. And I just thought, boy, that is a,
Yeah, that's a Tennessee
Williams
player.
That's what we need more of.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we need. Well, Dave, I don't know where we're going with health care. I really appreciate your time visiting with us. I always do. And I look forward to hearing from you again.
Well, you can count on the fact, Mike, that a couple of years from now we'll be back here talking about health care again because this is no reform. I think the whole thing is a complete joke and a fiasco. And it's not going to do a thing to fix the problem.
No kidding. Like Bob Dole on Viagra. Hold on. Yes, folks. I want you to know that's a two-time Fulbright Rhodes Scholar. Yeah. He's a great guy. Been lived abroad in various countries, is a great guy, real smart writer too. And you know, he pointed out at his website, thiscan'tbehappening.net. It's all one word, thiscan'tbehappening.net. That he pointed out that of the tens of thousands of people that go to his website, if every one of them would just donate $5 a year, that's right, a year, he would be set up enough to do investigative journalism. And I think that's a great, and that's what he is by trade. He's wrote for Business Week, all kinds of periodicals, Rolling Stone, and Dave Lindorf at thiscan'tbehappening.net. I can't encourage you enough to go there and throw him $5. And you know, I know times are real hard. I just heard my National Public Radio affiliate all this week. It's almost gross, the nonstop begging. But independent investigative journalists are a real asset that must be protected and kept close, real close to us, brothers and sisters. Brothers and sisters, I'm telling you, you can see this is a nonpartisan program. I mean, I'm a radical progressive. I really am. A socialist even, you know. But honestly, this kind of, you aren't going to get this programming from Glenn Beck, the new white Jesus of the Rupert Murdoch Fox News machine. You're not going to get this kind of programming. Sending $5 or more if you can afford it. thiscan'tbehappening.net. And he has complete instructions on how to do that. Let's listen to some old-time music for just a few minutes, and we'll get back to that was great. I appreciate these conversations. I hope you do, too. Here's a good one.
I have a sad story to tell you. It may hurt your feelings a bit. Last night when I walked into my bathroom, I stepped in a big pile of shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen. I think I'll break off with my girlfriend. Her antics are queer, I'll admit. Each time I say, darling, I love you, she tells me that I'm full of shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen. Our baby fell out of the window. You think that her head would be split. But good luck was with her that morning. She fell in a barrel of shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen. An old lady died in a bathtub. She died from a terrible fit. In order to fulfill her wishes, she was buried in 6 feet of shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen. When I was in France with the army, one day I looked into my kit. I thought I would find me a sandwich, but the darn thing was loaded with shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen. And now, folks, my story is ended. I think it is time I should quit. If any of you feel offended, stick your head in a barrel of shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen.
Why is the Senate's health care reform bill such mush? I'll tell you today on Hightower Radio.
That's right. Hightower, Jim Hightower, is back by popular demand. One of my best writers, one of my favorite writers, and sent this in. One of them said, put Jim Hightower back on. There's another guy who digs up some stuff. He calls himself an inspirational, motivational speaker, but I think he's more than that. He digs up some good stuff. This is just like Dave Lindorf. And here we go. Jim Hightower. Just for a couple minutes.
America's shouting match over health care reform has turned completely goofy. And I'm not talking about confused seniors at teabag rallies getting red-faced with anger after being told by the right-wing scare machine that government is trying to take over Medicare. No, I'm talking about our United States senators. Take Max Baucus, please. He's the lightweight Montana Democrat to whom President Obama entrusted the heavy job of shepherding health care reform through the upper chamber. It was like asking Tweety Bird to lift a bowling ball. Baucus, backed by unanimous and enthusiastic support from every Republican on his committee, has merrily jettisoned reform after reform that the industry opposed. For example, an amendment to require drug price discounts for low-income seniors with multiple chronic illnesses, killed. The provision to include a not-for-profit public insurance option to increase competition, provide consumer choice, and keep insurance corporations honest, gone. Why? Baucus said his goal was to produce a bill that would win the industry support and get the 60 votes needed to overcome a Republican filibuster. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's it? That's his goal? If the meek ever inherit the earth, Baucus will be a land baron. Why isn't it his goal to produce the best health care there is for all of the American people? Why has he let Republicans, who were voted out of office last year in part because of their failure to deal with people's health care needs, control the terms of the debate and the content of the Democrats' bill? Why does he not take a couple of testosterone shots and reach out to the 65% of Americans, including 47% of Republicans and 63% of doctors, who support the public insurance option? Why doesn't he rally them to kick the selfish health insurance lobbyists right in the butt and do what needs to be done for America?
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Things got bad and things got worse. moi, ma chérie. Je vous aime beaucoup. Je pourrais vous dire tant de choses, mais c'est si difficile en anglais. Vous me pardonnez? Vous me pardonnez? Je suis d'ici pas très long, mais s'il vous plaît, écoute ma son. Vous avez un grand appel, to speak my heart, c'est si difficile. Permettez-moi de vous expliquer, dans my own peculiar way, exactly what mon cœur would say. Darling, je vous aime beaucoup, je ne sais pas what to do. Vous avez completely stolen my heart. Matin, midi et le soir, toujours wondering where you are. That's the way I felt right from the start. Oh chérie, my love for you is très très fort. Wish my English were good enough, I tell you so much more. Mais j'espère that you comprend all the little things you mean to me. My darling, je vous aime beaucoup. I love you. Darling, vous êtes très jolie. Mais qu'est-ce que c'est vous do to me? Absolument, je suis in a trance. Tout le temps, j'espère que vous dream of me a little too. Oh chérie, je pense this is romance. Quand nous sommes alone and you are in my arms, je remercie le bon Dieu for you lovely child. Tell me, do you love me too? Je suis happy if you do. My darling, je vous aime beaucoup. I love you so. I do. I do love you.
Django Reinhardt, playing right under the nose of the Nazis. That's right. Before that, the immortal John Fogerty. What a great couple of songs there. Well, it's raining still. My cat, well, my cats went in. Cold rain. That's cold rain. You know, and, oh, by the way, have you? Did you catch PBS Frontline, the documentary? I linked it on the flyer, The Fighting Cock. Just Google, you know how to Google, and bookmark it. Bookmark the Fightin' Cock Flyer. Fightin' Cock Flyer. There's a link there for Frontline on the documentary that came up just this yesterday evening. It's called The Warning. My God, that's the damnedest documentary I've seen by Frontline. They always do good stuff, but this was a really good one. The Warning. You can watch it online. And I think they play it again on Thursdays on certain PBS affiliates in your local area. But check it out and watch it online. It's well worth the information. It is scary to know that Larry Summers and Geithner and what's his name, Rubin, these people are huddled around the Obama administration right now. They really do. They really should. Alan Greenspan, they should have been. They should be put up on charges. I don't know what. There's probably not any laws because they've deregulated so much of these banksters and the Wall Street. The banksters and the Wall Street are operating in black boxes. Nobody knows. Watch The Warning on Frontline PBS. I'm really big on that. And by the way, I want to happily announce that we've made it. Robert Perry, Bob Perry's made it. They made the Consortium News. Consortium News, C-O-N-S-O-R-T-I-U-M, News, Consortium News, made their challenging grant where they, if they had a an anonymous donor who pledged $20,000 if they could raise 10, and that's a tough thing. That doesn't get you off the hook, listeners. No. There's a great three-book set for as little as $29. Go to Consortium News and order their three-book set. They're trying to get them out of the warehouse, and they need the money. Just because they made their fundraising doesn't mean we got to stop. And here, I'm going to play this again because I wanted to play it. I was hoping to play it several times, but I'm going to do it again. Here's just some background about Bob Perry and Ray McGovern. Only 15 minutes.
Hey, you hayseeds out there. You sodbusters, you buck-tooth pals. You listeners of Radio Free Kansas, you're in for a treat. I'm telling you right now, I've got something. I've got a guy on the line that knows. He's been telling us the skinny ever since the Iran-Contra thing. This guy has been doing independent investigative journalism for 30 years, at least, that I know of. You know, my wife, a long time ago, she got on there, and she, in 1995, she was the first to get on the net. She got on, she knew what a computer was before I did, and Lord howdy, she gave me one. You know the rest of the story, but she got on the, one day got on the net back in 1996, early, long time ago, and said, you need to check out Consortium News. That's right, folks, Consortium News. Yeah, we've got Mr. Robert Perry, Bob Perry, on the phone right now. And pardon the pun, Bob, you're neck deep in an important fundraising challenge. Hello, Mr. Perry.
How you doing?
All right, I'm telling you, this is a good thing. You're neck deep into a fundraiser. Tell me about it. What's going on? This is a great thing.
Yeah, well, it is good because obviously money is very important if the journalism is going to get done that needs to get done, and the information is to get to the American people. There's a requirement that that it gets funded somehow. And we did have a donor who came forward and said he was willing to donate $20,000 to help keep consortiumnews.com going, but he wanted to see if we could show that we had enough additional support, and he asked if we could raise $10,000
right.
for matching effort for his 20, so sort of a 2-for-1 arrangement. And so I said, okay, we'll give it a shot. So we started basically a 2-week effort to raise that $10,000 about a bit over a week ago.
Yeah.
And so far, we have raised about half of that amount.
Well, this is
so
important. That's right.
Hopefully,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well,
so
this is important. Yeah, this is one of the most important sites, folks. You can give a little bit of money to, and it's nothing big. He offers quite a few options. The neck deep, I call it neck deep set, Bob. I'm sorry. It's a 3-book set for $29. You can get it, and it's a great, great thing to put on your shelves, on your book.
Right. We've been offering a 3-book set, which is basically the last 3 books I was involved in writing, Lost History, which we published. Actually about 10 years ago, but it compiled some of the early stories we had done at Consortium News and dealt with some very important history that has been either ignored or forgotten about.
Well, now that one's got some of the Iran-Contra stuff that you, the stories
right,
you broke.
Exactly,
you broke those
it's
stories.
It's exactly Iran-Contra, which I had written for the Associated Press and Newsweek before I started Consortium News in 95. But that book is in the package, along with I think one of the most important books that I've been involved with is Secrecy and Privilege, which I wrote back around 2004. And Secrecy and Privilege describes essentially how the Bush family, especially George H.W. Bush, rose to power, and much of the secrecy and corruption that surrounded that period. Much of that history also has been obscured or lost over the years. I look at his role both at the CIA back in the 70s and the role he played in corrupting the intelligence process and then carrying it forward to the 1980 election and going through the very interesting history of the so-called October surprise case, which
mm-hmm.
actually has been very well documented and proven, even though it's, according to official Washington, it didn't happen. And then taking it forward to the older Bush's role in Iran-Contra and other scandals of the 80s, and then passing it off eventually to his ability to escape from all that when he was not really held accountable. And that set the stage for his son then rising to be president in 2000. So it sort of shows how, in a sense, how the United States got into the mess through all these various problems. So that is part of the package. And the third book in this group is Neck Deep, which carries it forward through George W. Bush's presidency and how that happened and why it happened. So the three book set we're offering for $29, which is pretty much our cost for publishing them. But I think it's important to get these books out. And we're also suggesting that people might donate them to libraries so the information gets more widely disseminated. And each time someone does that for $29, we're counting that also towards the $10,000 match.
Yes, and one of my listeners informed me, now there's been a couple of them that I know have ordered books. One of them said that he ordered two sets, one to donate to his village library, our little small towns out here. We live in small towns, and he's going to donate his to the village library. And I have Neck Deep, and I'm just in. It's one of the folks. And by the way, you're not a Democratic Party hack, are you? You don't write just for the you don't write for the Democrats, do you?
No, of course not. No, we're actually pretty critical of the Democrats. But we basically are journalists. That's our approach, has been to be journalistic, and that means you set aside those kinds of partisan concerns, ideological concerns. The books are really driven by information, by what we can prove, what we can establish, and we take pride in these stories well reported. So if someone uses them or it becomes part of how they understand the world around them, that it's correct, and so they can rely on what we say, because I use essentially old-fashioned journalistic principles for producing everything we produce. That is, we try to be fair, we try to make sure it's well documented, we make sure that what we're saying is well backed up.
Well, yes, and my son, he's 12 years old, he's now fortunate enough to go to social studies. He goes up here to Jefferson County North School, and he's been reading some of the chapters out of Neck Deep, and he's a fact checker, and he's saying, he was telling me the other day, Daddy, you know, I think these Ridge Runners out here need to understand this. I said, well, put it in one of your little, he has a little three or four paragraph papers he has to write. I said, put that in there, and I showed him how to write a footnote for the first time, and Neck Deep is on the footnote, a footnote on one of his little papers that he wrote, and it's interesting. It's very interesting the way people come to knowledge, and your independent investigative journalism is very rare. It's really rare to have this kind of journalism, which really it takes no prisoners. I mean, you really do go both ways. It's not a partisan issue. Good journalism, don't you agree? Good journalism has nothing to do with.
Oh, that's right.
Partisan.
No, that's right. But obviously, there are some politicians who are more honest and who are more rational and reasonable than others. So you can't. It's not a matter of equally condemning everybody.
Right.
You have to be selective in the sense of who is telling the truth, who is deceiving, and you want to be much harder on those who are doing the deceiving. So the idea that everyone should be nailed equally, I disagree with. I think
journalists
have to be selective.
Well, that's one of my reasons I rely on you, Mr. Perry, because I like to slam them all. But you give me a reasoning. You give me a more balanced. You put a little velvet on that ruler I want to use, and all the politicians. You know, I put a little velvet on the rulers. But I'm gonna tell you something. This is another, I was just the other day, now listeners, sodbusters, listen in. I was I was doing my show, and in the middle of the show, a guy called in offline. He didn't call the call-in talk line. He called off my phone. Fortunately, I was playing some pre-recorded stuff, so I answered the phone. I didn't like doing it, but I knew who it was. And he says, "Bob Perry's on Blog Talk Radio. Bob Perry's on Blog Talk Radio. Bob Perry's on." That's all he would say. And I said, "Well," he couldn't tell me anything else. And I said, "He says," and I said, "Well, cool, you know." And he said, "Man, you need to get him back on." And I said, "Well, I will. This isn't your chance, Mr. Perry. Mr. Perry, this is just a plug to get people to get some money toward you. Now, I've got a question, a personal question to you. What's it going to take to get McGovern and Perry out to Kansas City's close enough. We need the Bob and Ray tour out here. Now, could you tell us a little bit about that?"
Well, one thing that Ray McGovern, of course, is a former CIA analyst, who was one of the folks back at the agency who actually tried to tell the truth, especially during the 80s, when it was a real effort by the Reagan administration to twist the intelligence.
Uh-huh.
It was under Bill Casey, and actually his deputy was Bob Gates. And what they did was essentially gut the analytical division of the CIA, which had a reputation for telling it straight, as best they could. And that was not acceptable to the Reagan crowd. They wanted politicized intelligence to fit their preconceptions. And they basically restructured the agency to do that. And, of course, the United States paid a very high price in this decade, because that agency that had been rebuilt and corrupted during the 80s was still essentially in place when George W. Bush wanted an excuse to attack Iraq. So,
mm-hmm.
But Ray McGovern represented that other side of the CIA that tried to tell the truth. And so after he retired, he has continued that effort. And he writes for consortiumnews.com quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so the two of us agreed to sort of think, we've done this a few times, that we would get together and give talks. Sort of almost, it's an odd couple in a way, because you don't normally think of investigative journalists and CIA officers combining like that. But
Well, he was an excuse me, Mr. Perry, he was an analyst. He wasn't a spook in the bushes. He wasn't a spook
right,
in the bushes. He was an analyst. He gathered information and condensed it.
We both had a commitment in different areas to getting at the truth. As a journalist, I was trying to get at the truth. As a CIA analyst, he was trying to get at the truth. And we both, ironically, in this, as things were going through the 1980s, both honest journalism and honest intelligence analysts came under heavy pressure to not tell the truth, to basically slant things.
Mm-hmm.
So the two of us thought we'd get together and offer ourselves up as a speaking duo as a way to raise money for the website. We thought this was a way that people out there in the country, if they wanted to both hear us and help the website survive, could have us come and, we raise some money around it. And then that would help us pay the bills at the website.
Sure.
Going. And also it would be a nice evening to people out around the country to hear, maybe they think it's interesting to hear to talk about what's going on.
And you guys, now, say some of now I have some quote unquote progressive listeners, a lot of them out here in Kansas. They hide in the cubby holes up in the creeks and stuff, and they come out every once in a while. A lot of them listen to this show. Now, there's a woman. I'm gonna broadcast that phone number. I'm gonna make all these progressive leaders in Kansas strongly consider booking you and getting a way to get you guys out here. I don't know how we're gonna do it. We're gonna work on that real hard, and that goes towards the challenge grant, doesn't it?
Right. Well, we also, the idea was if we could get a commitment, even if it's not something we could fulfill by, I think, October 18th was the date we're supposed to meet this challenge. But if someone said, "Listen, we can do something for $2,000, if you come out to Kansas City or come out to Minneapolis, or we could count that toward the grant too."
Right, and that's what we're gonna. I'm gonna push every level of this. This is a this is a worthy option. Now, by the way, the people out here, all my buddies now who are Republican working class youth, young people, they have to listen to Glenn Beck and his crew on AM radio. Now, this is an option, folks. This is an alternative. If Ray McGovern, Bob Perry comes out here, we're going to record it. And you're going to be hearing more. Many of you already know Ray McGovern because he's been gracious and has given extensive interviews with me on Radio Free Kansas. And I'm going to push Bob, Mr. Perry, onto the scene here in Radio Free Kansas. And I want you guys to keep your ears up and listen in. This is going to be an ongoing thing. It's not going to go away. I'm not going to go away. You all know that. You know, I don't go away. I'm a native Kansan. I'm not leaving the state, no matter how much many conservatives would like to run me out of the state and tried to. They aren't going to get away with it. Bob Perry, we're going to bring you Kansas one way or the other.
Well, I'd love to go.
Hold on. That's right, folks. Now, they made the challenge. That's not good enough for me. No, we need to get him in Kansas. We need to bring him to Kansas, bring him to Kansas City. Bob Perry and Ray McGovern. Now, they call it the whimsically they call it the Bob and Ray Show. And between you and me, I think Bob is the straight guy. Straight news, you know. In any event, we've got to work on that, and I'm going to start working on it. I'm glad I played that clip to remind me of what we need to be doing here. Oh, here's something.
There are ways to compensate for the lack of resources and finding those resources. Start your own CIA.
The end result is that you do have access to resources in a way which I doubt that any national intelligence agency can duplicate, let alone scholarship. So there are ways of compensating for the absence of resources. People can do things. Like, for example, I found out about the arms flow to Iran by reading transcripts of the BBC and by reading an interview somewhere with an Israeli ambassador in one city and reading something else in the Israeli press. Now, okay, the information is there, but it's there to a fanatic, you know, somebody who wants to spend a substantial part of their time and energy exploring it and comparing today's lies with yesterday's leaks and so on. That's a research job. And it's, you know, it just simply doesn't make any sense to ask the general population to dedicate themselves to this task on every issue. Hundreds of talks a year or spending 20 hours a week writing letters or writing books is not directed to intellectuals and politicians. It's directed to what are called ordinary people. And what I expect from them is, in fact, exactly what they are, that they should try to understand the world and act in accordance with their decent impulses, and that they should try to improve the world. And many people are willing to do that, but they have to understand. And in fact, as far as I can see in these things, I feel that I'm simply helping people develop courses of intellectual self-defense.
What did you mean by that? What would such a course?
Ed Robinson, Non-Corporate News, Public Access TV, Lynn, Massachusetts.
Well, I don't mean go to school, because I'm going to get it there. It means you have to develop an independent mind and work on it. Now, that's extremely hard to do alone. The beauty of our system is it isolates everybody. Each person is sitting alone in front of the tube. It's very hard to have ideas or thoughts under those circumstances. You can't fight the world alone. Some people can, but it's pretty rare. The way to do it is through organization. So courses of intellectual self-defense will have to be in the context of political and other organization. And it makes sense, I think, to look at what the institutions are trying to do and to take that almost as a key. What they're trying to do is what we're trying to combat. If they're trying to keep people isolated and separate and, you know, and so on, well, we're trying to do the opposite. we're kind of bringing together. So in your local community, you want to have sources of alternative action. People with parallel concerns, maybe differently focused, but at the core, sort of similar values and a similar interest in helping people learn how to defend themselves against external power and taking control of their lives and, you know, reaching out your hand to people who need it. That's a common array of concerns. You can learn about your own values and you can figure out how to defend yourself and so on in conjunction with others.
On integrity of the press, before some students at Naomi, I don't know how to pronounce it, Naomanagh, Canada.
One or two people that think they have integrity as journalists to give you some good press.
See, that's important, and that goes back to something that came up before. I mean, there's a lot, you know, there are contradictions, you know, things are complex. It's not monolithic. I mean, the mass media themselves are complicated institutions with internal contradictions. So on the one hand, there's the commitment to indoctrination and control. But on the other hand, there's the sense of professional integrity.
She works alone as her own boss, writing newspaper columns and producing radio commentaries for a hodgepodge of small clients across the country.
Her name was Sarah McClendon, independent journalist operating out of Washington, D.C. You'll hear the voices of several presidents as she throws some questions at him. And then with Professor Chomsky, she questions him. Sarah McClendon.
This so-called leather lung Texan has been firing questions at our chief executive for almost 40 years.
Many a young man in this country is being disillusioned totally by his government these days.
Well, this is a question which you very properly bring to the attention of the nation. It's not that we haven't been holding press conferences. I was just waiting for Sarah to come back.
Mr. President, that's very nice of you, and I appreciate it. Sir, I want to call to your attention a real problem we've got in this country today.
Those unique and often terrifying McClendon questions reflect her desire to dig out information.
And I want to ask your new man what he feels.
With enough know-how and persistence, she usually gets her man.
What would you do if you were in a situation where you were trying to be an honest reporter, and you were worried sick about your country, and you saw how sick it was, and you were facing this weak White House and a weak Congress as a reporter, what would you do?
Well, I think there are a lot of reporters who do a very good job. In fact, I have a lot of friends in the press who I think do a terrific job. First of all, you have to understand what the system is, and smart reporters do understand what it is. You have to understand what the pressures are, what the commitments are, what the barriers are, and what the openings are. Like right after the Iran-Contra hearings, a lot of good reporters understood, well, things are going to be a little more open for a couple of months. They could ram through stories that they knew they couldn't even talk about before.
After Watergate.
And the same after Watergate. And then, you know, it closes up again and so on. Most people, I imagine, simply internalize the values. That's the easiest way. And the most successful way. You just internalize the values, and then you regard yourself, in a way, correctly as acting perfectly freely.
All right, let's get to the White House now, where I think veteran correspondent Frank Sesno could tell us a little bit about self-censorship, that inertial guidance system is always going on. Is there any formal censorship there?
Well, there's no self-censorship, Reid. If somebody tells me something, I'm going to pass it on, unless there's a particular and compelling reason not to. I can't deny that I wouldn't like to have access to the Oval Office and all the same maps and charts and graphs that the President's looking at, but that's not possible, it's not realistic, and it's probably not even desirable.
Once me lamb bricks and old Bill Brown took the load of corn to town, and old Jim Dobbs, the ornery cuss, he just naturally followed us. As we drove past Sam Johnson's store, past the apps came out the door. When Jim, he stopped to smell a box, they shied at him a bunch of rocks. Every time I come to town, the boys keep kicking my dog around. Make no difference if he is a hound, they gotta quit taking my dog around. They tied a tin can to his tail and run him past the county jail. And that plum naturally makes me sore, and Lem he cussed and Bill he swore. Me Lem Briggs and old Bill Brown, we lost no time in a jumping down, and we wiped them ducks up on the ground for kicking my old dog around. Every time I come to town, the boys keep kicking my dog around. Make no difference if he is a hound, they gotta quit kicking my dog around. Folks say a dog can't hold no grudge, but once when I got too much fudge, them sound ups tried to do me up, but they didn't count on old Jim Pup. Jim seed his duty there and then, and he licked into them gentlemen, and he sure must up the coathouse squaw with rags and meat and hide and haw. Every time I come to town, the boys keep kicking my dog around. Makes no difference if he is a hound, they gotta quit kicking my dog around.
Well, another great series of clips there from Radio Free Kansas. I hope you enjoyed them. Yes, I hope you enjoyed them, folks. Support the independent investigative journalists. Home in on it, folks. Let's do it. Focus. Focus. Going to get confusing. It already is confusing. Of course, I'm sure you city slickers know exactly what you're doing. It's going well, isn't it? Yeah, well, I hope you'll check out the Fight Talk Flyer, the Daily News ticker, at the Flyer. Take you local events happening in Lawrence and Kansas City. Every week there's news posted. Thank you, by the way, brothers and sisters in Lawrence and Kansas City. By the way, upcoming Halloween, there'll be a special Halloween show coming up on Halloween Day, and I'm thinking of booking up a couple more days with the Blog Talk Radio Network and catching up. I've got a lot of tape to run. Good night.